Hey everyone, a quick little message while we're, as Tessa just said, under construction.
I'm just visualizing us with our little yellow vests and hard hats on.
That's right.
The do not cross line.
Yes. So those of you that are tuning in right now, we are recasting some of our favorite episodes from this final season of the Radically Loved podcast. Stay subscribed, because we are coming back the first week of January, better and newer and more focused.
Yes. So excited for this. Here we go.
We're so excited. We're excited and also just like mortified, but let's not talk about that. We'll see you all soon. Hello friends, I'm Rosie Acosta, your host and guide on this journey to self-discovery and radical love. I've walked a path filled with challenges. Growing up in East LA during the 92 LA riots, it left me searching for meaning, for mentors, for a way to truly understand the purpose of life. But you know what I found? The power of conversation. So I decided to create a space where we can share these conversations with you, our community. And that's how the Radically Loved podcast was born. Join me as we dive into topics like mindfulness, spirituality, self-love, and the keys to overall healthy living. I'm joined by my dear friend, fellow author, producer, and teacher, Tessa Tovar.
Hi, I'm Tessa, and I'm grateful to be part of this community because it teaches me so much about what it means to be human. Ever since I was a little one, I was always asking the deeper questions in life. Why are we here? What happens when we are gone? What is the purpose of life? I love this show because I get to ask the questions that cut right to the meaning of life. I've learned that no matter how much we want the path to be clear, it never is. And that is actually part of the beauty that creates a radically loved life.
Please do us a favor, share the episodes you love with your friends, and leave us a review. Together, we'll learn how to create a life that's truly, deeply, radically loved. Let's begin. Gadget, go, go, gadget. Oh, do you remember that? Did you ever watch that?
Yes, Penny and the dog. What was the dog's name?
Oh, I can't remember.
Oh, that's going to bug me. But yeah, I loved Inspector Gadget. That Penny was the niece, right? And didn't she have little pennies for eyeballs?
Okay, so I'm going to look it up. Inspector Gadget animated series cast, right?
Yeah.
So it was...
characters?
Oh, no, but it's giving me the film, not the cartoon. I was talking about the cartoon. You know?
Oh, I didn't realize they did a film. Was that after my time?
It was after our time. No, because we remember the it was Penny and what was the dog's name?
There was a dog, right? I'm not making
There was a dog.
Okay.
He was Brain.
Brain. Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, Brain
is Gadget and Penny's shy but intelligent, sweet, lovable, and curious for later 5-year-old dog. That's so cute.
Oh.
You know what's interesting? Cartoon. Me too. Oh, when was the last? What was the last time you watched Saturday morning cartoons? You remember Saturday morning cartoons?
Oh my god, I lived for that. Mainly because my parents didn't let me watch TV at all, except for 30 minutes at night before I go to bed. If it was like an approved show, they would let me watch it. But Saturday morning cartoons was one thing that they didn't really lock down, so I got to watch Saturday morning cartoons. And you know, I've always been an early bird, so I got up at the butt crack of dawn and.
Yes.
Started watching those right away. What was the last time
in it? I love that.
Oh, gosh. I don't know, Rosie. Maybe like when I was 12, decades ago.
Wow.
It's been a long time.
Yeah, you know, I mean, if you really think about it, like I saw this meme. So on Instagram, I've found that I just like to share funny old 80s and 90s memes from childhood. It's funny. I get a lot of people that respond. So I'm like, I'm going to just keep doing this. But you know what's really interesting? So I'm on this kick right now. I've been for months about going back to analog. I just want to go back to a time where things took some time. I want to go and write a letter and mail it to a friend. I want to have a pen pal. Like, I want to listen to a record and I want to sit down without any distractions and read a book. You know what I'm saying? Like, I just long for those moments where things used to take time and it used to build anticipation. And so that's why I brought the Saturday morning cartoon question up, because I remember having to wait. We didn't have, like, there wasn't Cartoon Network how there is now, 24/7. You can watch cartoons all day long. Right. You can even go on YouTube and watch a, you know, plethora of cartoons. Before, we used to have to wait. Like, I used to wake up early and we used to watch Sesame Street before going to school, or PBS. So that was my first introduction to yoga, was seeing, I mean, I didn't know what it was, but it was like, they would play yoga on PBS early, early in the morning. And like, for some reason, it was just playing in our house. Like, so weird. And then I think Sesame Street would start right after. And so, but it wasn't until Saturday morning where you would wait so, so patiently and excitedly and just sit there and you get to watch, you know, like cartoons. And I feel like today in the era that we're in, with everything being consumed so rapidly and so indulgently, we've lost our ability to wait and be patient about something, right?
Oh my gosh. Oh yeah, for sure. I was sitting in the dining room table a couple of days ago with my nephew Christopher, and he was playing music on his cell phone, and it was like an instrumental interlude. We were listening to the beginning of the song before the lyrics started, and it's an old song, right? So it didn't have like, there's not like all the things right away. There's a lead up to, to the lyrics.
Yes.
And he changes it halfway through the interlude. And I'm like, what? We were just getting going. And he's like, well, there was no lyrics. I'm like, but you have to wait for it. So I feel that nostalgia for things that take time, or like, you know, introductions of movies. Do you remember how long they used to be?
Yes, they were
a
very long
story before they.
Yeah, it's like the old James Bond films used to do that, right? So, exactly. Oh yeah, like I live for that. I really feel like, you know, the art of waiting is beginning to get lost. We've atrophied our ability to wait.
Yeah.
I mean, we truly have. And I think that it's so unfortunate, because, you know, just to bring it back to the mindfulness perspective, when we're fully present and mindful of what we're doing, we're able to enjoy it so much more, because we're completely immersed in an experience. And that's what we live for, right? We live to find meaning, and we live to feel experiences. And when we're not able to do that because we're just so wanting to rush and rush through and rush through. I mean, I have so many tabs open. I have so many videos on my watch later. I have so many things and really great things. And there's really great content out there. And I'm sure there's really incredible cartoons out there, right? Like, yes. I'm sure there's really cool, cool things out there. But for me, it's like, I miss the days and those moments where I would have to wait for a letter, or I'd have to wait for somebody to return that Blockbuster movie, right? From Blockbuster, right? Because it's like they only had so many copies. So you'd call Blockbuster and be like, hey, have they returned, you know, Never Ending Story, even though I've watched it a million times, right? Have they returned it? I want to see it, you know? Yeah. So yeah, I don't know. Sorry, we got off on a tangent, but I think it's kind of apropos. I'm really curious how you've been doing the last couple of weeks. And I know we've been doing this now for a little over a month, and I've so been enjoying this process with you back on the podcast. It's been so nice. And I know that people that are listening are really excited to have this this duo back.
Oh my gosh. It's just like, I mean, when even just hearing you remind me that you're back, I just like, oh, it makes me take a deep breath. Then I relax a little bit more and it's like, okay, everything's fine. And not that everything wasn't fine. It's not that I'm not trying to say everything wasn't fine. It was fine. It's just, those are some big shoes to fill, y'all. Okay. And
I think you did a great job.
And it was so fun. You know, I learned so much and I always learn so much. And I say this all the time. I just love to learn and I love to ask questions. But there's something about having Rosie, you there by my side, that makes it so much more fun. Because I just love you. I just want to hang out with you all the time. I wish you didn't live so far away.
I do too. I know.
So
it's kind of a drag, right? That it's like, I'm far. I think, you know, I keep talking about
the waiting game.
Yeah. The waiting game. I keep talking about, like to tour. I'm like, should we move back? He will never. Ooh. I mean, I would never, honestly, at this point, I would never move back. I would want to have a place there that I can go to. Like, I'd love to spend the summers up there. You know, like I'd love to just spend like spring and summer up there and then fall and winter here, you know. Ooh. I mean, like in a perfect world, that would be heaven for me. But I mean, come on now, like we're not, like we ain't living like that yet. So I have to bring it back down. But yeah, you know, it's been really nice for me to sort of reconnect and get back into it and get re-inspired. I know I talked about this when we had our conversation a couple of weeks ago, but one of the things that I'm finding is how much of an anchor doing this and having these conversations is for me, because there's no other way. I'm not teaching at a studio anymore, right? Like I'm not consistently at a place every week. In person, in IRL, right? In real life. Mm-hmm. So this is my way of still feeling that connection to our community and to our people, because I think that's something that's so important. And I feel like it's something that's lacking so much in our immediate community. It's like, where is our community, right? Like where is that community? Where are our people? Like, We need to have that. You know, I think both of us, you and I both have gone through a lot in the last year. And I feel like for a large period or a large portion of that time, for me, I was just struggling by myself, right? Because that's what we do. We just white knuckle it and we just push through these difficult moments, not wanting to bother people or not wanting to bring people down or not wanting to feel like we're burdening anybody, you know, like we're being a, you know, low vibe friend. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, like you think about the people that you love and you care about in your life, right? If they came to you and asked you for help or to be a listening ear, I guarantee most of those people would say yes. Mm-hmm. Am I right?
Oh yeah. Well, I've had a direct experience with this lately in preparing for surgery. You know, we've got a meal train going. I mean, it's just like some people I've known for my whole life and some people I've known for a little bit of time, but it's just overwhelming the amount of support. When you ask for it, what you receive tenfold is like, wow, these people are willing to come walk my crazy dogs for me. These people are willing to make me a homemade meal. And you know, it's just, it's so overwhelmingly sweet that I'm just like, oh my gosh, I feel like, how do I show my appreciation in a way that's equal to what I feel? It just feels like, how do I even, you know, and it's like the concept of you pay it forward. Okay. So when you can help, you pay it forward. But I, you know what, Rosie, I think it's all related. You were talking about analog and wanting to go back and that sense of loss of community. For me, they're very closely linked. Mm. I feel you know, I've been thinking about this a lot lately because I'm always consuming content. I'm always listening to podcasts. I'm always reading paper books. I think that's one thing. Paper books, yes. That makes me feel really grounded and connected to myself, to my soul, which for me, number one is that's the place I always have to start when I'm feeling like, where's my community? Where's my sense of patience? Where's my sense of self? I have to come back to, well, are you connected with yourself? Are you feeding yourself? And then I can fill my cup and then I can fill others' cups. But it's when I'm constantly carrying around this little device, my cell phone everywhere I go, it makes me feel like, I don't know if that's the right way to say it, but I feel like this fast-paced go, go, go pressure to always be on. And so I'm wondering, how do we find a balance between our technology, which is so, it's been so helpful in so many ways. It's really advanced us in a lot of ways. And
right.
It also creates this sense of competition. It creates a sense of divisiveness. It creates a sense of not enoughness sometimes if I'm not careful, if I don't check myself. I mean, like any tool, it's a tool. You can use it for good, bad, but I wonder how we find the balance between those two. Like what you're saying, I want analog, I want old school, I want slow productivity. Can I do that and also have a cell phone?
Yes. I mean, I like to think, yes, it requires a lot of discipline, I think, though, because it is a tool that can promote inadequacy at a very deep level. I think a lot of social media, not our phones, if we can utilize our phone as a phone and email and texting device, you can delete all of those other apps. Like you have the power, you literally have the power to delete everything. And, you know, we don't because we think that we can manage, right? And most of us really feel adamant, and even some of us might take breaks, or you might set a timer to alert you on your phone that you've had enough social media time. You can do all of those things, and whatever works for you can work for you. But what I will say is what I've found for myself and most people in my life is it is very hard. Like it is very, very hard to disconnect. The way that I like to do it is I like to have you know, it's like I clock in and I clock out, even though I've been, you know, an entrepreneur for over a decade. Like I try to be very, very, very mindful and disciplined about my use of the phone in general. Like I clock in, I do a little social media in the morning. I might check it again in the afternoon, and then I'm clocking out after 6 o'clock, like you won't hear from me, right? I'm done with the devices. I might watch a show. I might turn on, you know, YouTube or something, but I find in the moments where I'm not feeling, where I'm going to say I'm in a weak state, like my brain is, I'll give you an example. So recently I don't know if I've talked about this before. Did I say I'm going back to school? I don't know if I said that.
No.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Okay, everybody. So news alert. I just went back to school to get my master's. And I'm getting my master's in psychology to become a licensed marriage and family therapist, something that I've been wanting to do for very long. And it definitely goes with my career at the moment. I do see myself utilizing it in a more, I don't know, profound way. I really love the research aspect, and I feel like, you know, it's going to take as long as it takes. You know, when I met with my counselor, she was like, oh, we can do this in 2 years, you know, maybe less. And I'm like, how about 3 years, maybe more? Yeah. You know, I'm just like, it's, I'm not in a rush. You know, I'm 40, I'm going to be 41. Like, it is a little intimidating going back to school after this long, because a lot of my peers are old enough to be my children, right? Like, and you know, anyway, it's also, there's a lot of people my age and older, which is also very inspiring, you know? So, just to give people some context, I just recently went back to school, and even though I said it's going to take as long as it takes, I am going to school full time, and I do also work a full time job. So, and look, I say this to give you context because I think it's important. So truth be told, it's very new to me, and I'm really giving myself the out of, if this becomes too overwhelming for me, it's okay. And I can drop a class or two. You know, maybe it's just two classes a semester instead of four, right? I have to be okay with that. So the other day I was, you know, I woke up, you know, my morning routine, do my practice, do a couple of emails, do a little bit of homework, start doing some work. I've got this big program that I'm working on with Headspace, which is really awesome and really cool. And it's going to be out later this fall, which, you know, it requires a lot of mind mm-hmm. Space. Also, I'm working on a second book. And also I have to like do my house duties, right? I've got laundry I need to do. I've got a partner that I need to feed. I've got dogs I need to play with. And on this particular day, it was like a full day. I mean, it's like the full Monty experience. I also had to drive to the studio to record. Basically, I worked a 13 plus hour day from beginning to end. And I was so fried the next day. Like I was fried, and I'm like, okay, well, here's a lesson. Can I continue to do that? Sure. I can push myself to do that. So there's the difference. I can push myself to do that. And I know that when I'm thinking about it in that way, I know it's not sustainable for me. Mm-hmm. Because I don't want to shit on people, but it's wise to not do that to yourself every day. Mm-hmm. And more often than not, we do that. We push ourselves through because we have to, right? Some people have kids, responsibilities, you got bills to pay, like, you don't have the, you know, luxury of having a schedule that you can manage yourself. You're on somebody else's schedule. So that makes it a lot more difficult. So what I found is the next day, I really was just not wanting to do anything, mm-hmm. you know, and you hear from me, I'm like, I am fried. Like I have nothing, like my brain cannot function right now. And that was just one day, right? Mm-hmm. So I had to re-examine my schedule and look at everything and be honest with myself and say, okay, like I need to allow myself certain moments where I need to be able to work out. I need to be able to play with my dogs. I need to be able to spend time with my partner. I need to be able to do the things that are important to me, right? What I ended up doing is just spend all day on TikTok. And that's just what happened. Like I had a couple of things that day that I moved around and I'm like, I just can't. And I just spent the entire day truly scrolling on TikTok, on Instagram, going through funny sending Tori memes all day long. Like, you know, and at the end of the day, I felt exhausted in a different way. And so I was like, okay, this is a really great comparison. I had a full day of work, nonstop brain engagement. And then I had a day where I had a different kind of brain engagement that wasn't making me feel fulfilled. And at the end of the day, like I get tired of scrolling. I don't know if that goes for you, but I really do. I just get sick of having the phone in my hand. Like I just have to put it down and go for a walk or like just sit out back and like just look at the birds, right? Mm-hmm. So when I was able to assess both days together, it just made me realize, okay, like there has to be a happy medium. Like how could I find a good balance of work and a little bit of, I call it non-brain engagement. Like that's going on social media because it's like, it just isn't requiring me to do much. And a lot of the time, I've said this before, I don't ever leave Instagram specifically and feel great. Like, no. I never leave feeling like, oh my God, that I just feel so amazing. It's like, I just don't. Like, somebody's celebrating something and I'm like, oh, like, I want to go to Hawaii, or, oh wow, like, baby shower. Somebody's celebrating a baby shower. It's like, oh damn, like, I know where I'm at. Like, that's not going to happen for me. You know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. there's just certain things that I think really affect us. And so, do I want to get off social media entirely? Would I be happy? 100%. Absolutely. And the only reason I have social media is because it's part of how I can connect, because there is a plus side to that, right? We get to interact with people that we would have normally not ever come into contact with. And I think that that's one of the pros of social media. We get to engage with them in a different way. But at the same time, it's like, what is the word I'm trying to look for?
It's like, at what cost or to what end?
To what end? I don't even know if I answered. I kind of went on a tangent. I'm sorry. Cause I'm just thinking about what you're saying, like, mm-hmm. about your surgery. And I think, you know, obviously, like, I'm so grateful that you're sharing all of that. I think it's really an important thing to be able to share with people, and a really hard thing to go through. And I know that it's like the date is getting closer, mm-hmm. and it's like, ugh. And I know how important it is for you to be mobile and to be like doing all of your things. And, you know, I'm going to go back to what is this teaching you? You know, like, what is the lesson here? You know, how can you make this situation, opportunity, the best thing that's ever happened to you?
Do you know if you're getting enough magnesium? Because 4 out of 5 Americans aren't. And that's a big problem, because magnesium is involved in more than 300 biochemical reactions in your body. Today, I want to talk to you about the most common signs to look for that could indicate you're magnesium deficient. Listen carefully to the end, because there's a special offer happening and this could be exactly what you need. Okay, here we go. Are you irritable or anxious? Do you struggle with insomnia? Do you experience muscle cramps or twitches? Do you have high blood pressure? Are you sometimes constipated? There are dozens of symptoms of magnesium deficiency, so these are just a few of the most common ones. Now, here's what most people don't know. Taking just any magnesium supplement won't solve your problem, because most supplements use the cheapest kinds that your body can't use or absorb. That's why I exclusively recommend Magnesium Breakthrough. It's the only full-spectrum magnesium supplement with 7 unique forms of magnesium that your body can actually use and absorb. All Bioptimizer supplements are best in class. If for some reason you feel differently, you can get a full refund, no questions asked. They are so confident that they offer 365-day money-back guarantee. Just go to www.bioptimizers.com/radically loved. Use the promo code radically loved10. You can get gifts with your purchase. You can get 2 travel size bottles of Magnesium Breakthrough. Act fast. This is a limited time offer. Go to bioptimizers.com/radically loved and use the promo code radically loved10.
I think there's so many different ways to look at that, and also to answer that question. It's multifold. It's, I mean, literally, it'll be like the day of the surgery will be my first day off in weeks, and so I've really been trying to be protective of post-surgery recovery time, and already there's like creep. I'm like, of my own volition, I'm putting things on my calendar. Right. And I need to check myself. I was just asking my partner this morning, I love my life and all of the things that I'm doing are things that I want to be doing, but it's times 100. And it's like you're saying, Rosie, Could I do it? Could I force myself to do all of it? Yeah. And I have been, but is it sustainable? And am I, you know, a coherent, healthy partner? Do I show up fully? I might show up 100% of my 50%. I don't know, 3 out of 4 days out of the week.
I love the odds here. Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
So I'm just trying to, and even leading up to the surgery, I've taken a lot of things off my plate. I feel like I've really reprioritized, but it's just that constant, okay, now I need to reprioritize again. Yeah. Now I need to check in again. Now I need to really advocate for myself at home in terms of my need for space to recovery and take my time and have my own feeling be my own feeling in that day and not have anyone else tell me, oh, well, you look fine. Go walk the dogs today. Oh, well, you seem like you have energy. Maybe you could do this for me. And no, it needs to be, you know, no matter how many other people have gone through the same experience and had their own experience with it, that's fine. That's for them. I need this to be me in my own time, having my own experience in real time. If that makes sense. Yeah. It's hard to like articulate because I haven't gone through it yet.
It is. No, but you're absolutely, you know, and here's the thing, like just as women and as women that are self-motivated, it's hard to, number one, ask for help. So once we do ask for the help, then it's hard to accept the help once we get the help. So it's a lot of managing expectations too. You know, I think for you to be able to be in a place of you're trying to set things up and you can see that those items infringing on your space for recovery and you're, you know, already like trying to prepare your, I was going to say roommate. So I keep calling, I called Tori my roommate the other day and I just started laughing. He's my roommate. Okay. But preparing your roommates for what's to come, I think it's important for us to feel supported as we're going into something that's really big and scary. And it's okay for us to feel scared and to, you know, want to do our best. But I feel like, yeah, I mean, it's so interesting to see how we start to react to those moments when we have to take care of ourselves, right? Yeah. Do you find, I'm curious for you, do you find that you have like a confident level of self-trust to care for yourself?
Ooh, oh God, that's such a good question. Ah, that really hits my heart, Rosie. I love that question. I think that's something that I've been working on in my later adult years. And it's something that I feel like the irony of that question is it's something that I feel like my parents really tried to instill in me at a young age. And I think cultural expectations and gender roles have really encroached on. It's almost like I feel like I'm being pulled apart in two different directions with the messages that I got from my family nucleus and the messages that I get from culture and gender roles. And so, and then I married into a Mexican family who I adore and I love, but those gender roles are very starkly different.
Yes, they are.
Than what I grew up with. And so coming to terms with that is really a lesson for me advocating for myself. And when I say, hey, I need help with this, to own it and not apologize for it. And so it's like learning to have expectations of other people without feeling guilty about having expectations that somebody else shows up for you and helps take care of you in your time of need. Because guess what? I've done it for you and I would do it again. And I would do it with my whole heart. And so it's okay for me to ask for that. And it's right that I would expect for my partner, for my family to show up for me in that way. I shouldn't be apologizing for that or feeling guilty about it. And yet, what did I say to my partner last night when he told me, literally, he told me, go to sleep. It's 7 o'clock. I'm having this conversation with him. 7 p.m., folks. 7 p.m. local time. I'm exhausted. I'm having this conversation on the phone with my lovely partner who is doing his best to support me. And he's telling me to go to sleep. He's like, I'm going to walk the dogs for you. Go to bed. And I said to him, I feel guilty. That was my response. And he's like, wow. You know what? Just go to bed. You deserve it. And I did. I did go to bed. Thank God. But it's like, where the hell is that coming from? Like, yeah. How come I'm still struggling with that right now? And I don't know what the like honest to God nucleus of the answer is, but I mean, what do you think, Rosie? Is it is it culture/gender roles? Why do we struggle with that as women? I don't think I'm alone here.
No, I don't think you're alone. But I mean, my instinctual thought is, and I hate to say this, I'm looking at it from the perspective of the yogic perspective, right? I go into the Yoga Sutras. I'm like, okay, how do I explain this? How do I, for myself, I'm thinking like how, and it's control, you know, mm-hmm. Like there's a little of that need to control, you know, that inability to let go, that inability to surrender. It's like, what does the sutra say when we are in the grips of the kleshas, right? So the kleshas are basically the cornerstones in yogic philosophy and a lot of Buddhist traditions as well. The kleshas are like the cornerstones of suffering. The first one is avidya, which is ignorance or incorrect understanding. The second is asmita, which is ego or my I amness. There's raga, which is attachment, like what I want, give me more of. Devesha is aversion and or repulsion, like give me less of what I don't want. You know, like I don't want any aversion, you know, something you're repulsed by. Mm-hmm. And the final thing being abhinavesha, the fear of death, right? So the sutras say that in order for us to alleviate from that is the study of sacred books, practice, and surrender to the divine, mm-hmm. right? Kriya. That's what it says. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So, when in doubt, you know, we have to go into that space, right? It's the tapas. The tapas mm-hmm. is that burning fire, right? We need to generate that fire to burn through all of the obstacles that we're feeling, all the attachment, all the aversion, all the fear, all the ego, you know, of I'm the one that has this job. Therefore, if I don't have this job, who am I? Right? Mm-hmm. What do I contribute if I'm not doing this? Right? So looking at it from that perspective, it makes a lot of sense to me that you're feeling the way you're feeling. And I say this because I'm with you. I feel the exact same way. And I can absolutely relate to everything that you're saying. For me, it mostly is ego and control because I grew up in an environment as a child where I had none, right? I'm like 6 years old living in a chaotic environment with drive-by shootings and, you know, constant fight or flight. Like my first 12 years, 13 years of being alive was in fight or flight. Like that's just how I lived, right? So I think as you grow up from trauma, from that space, and trauma is different and varies in different ways. You know, everybody, I feel like we all experience some sort of trauma as a child. Like there's always something really pivotal that compels us to grow and have certain beliefs. Mm-hmm. So, and it is very complex. For me as an adult, I found that because of that samskara or that memory, it really created this need for control. I need to control the situation. I need to be in charge. I need to be the one because I know that if I'm in charge, it's going to be done the right way. Mm. And if it's done the right way, then I don't have to rely on somebody else to keep me safe, because I keep me safe.
Mm.
Right?
Oh, yeah. That's such a helpful step back. You know what I love about these yogic precepts and the concepts is it's like, as I was telling you all these reasons and these thoughts that I have, that whirling, that vritti, the swirling in my mind, I'm getting attached to my story, right? And I'm starting to feel a nervous system response. And then when you respond in that way, it's like, oh, I can take a step back and look at this from a bird's eye view and create some separation between my experience or my thought drama or my story. And all that it probably really is like this over-identification with what I think may or may not happen. And guess what? I'm going to be fine and I'll get through it. Like it'll be a blip, right? I mean, it sounds like a long time and I don't want to minimize it at all because it is a big deal. But also in the grand scheme of life, it'll be this thing that comes and it goes and we'll continue on. And it's like, I don't have to attach.
But at the same time, like, you know, I think it's important for you to, yes. And the process that you went through is exactly the way that is healthy to go through it. You also don't want to, gaslight yourself, right? Like you don't want to be like, oh no. Like imagine if I was just like, just surrender to the divine. You're fine. Like stop, let it go. You know, for some people listening to that or hearing that, it works. For other people, like we need to go through the experience. We need to go through the fire. We need to put ourselves through the hell and the mental anguish of what is the worst case scenario? These are all the things that I'm afraid of. This is, you know, X, Y, and Z. And this is why I'm afraid. And what if it, you know, goes wrong? And it's like, that's the fire, right?
Yeah.
We have to, for some, we have to go through that process in order to arrive at the precipice of, okay, now I surrender, you know, now I surrender to the divine, or I give in to whatever's coming is coming. And it's the present moment. And, you know, impermanence, you know, like we go into the state of non-attachment, which is easy to say, but look, I say all that because I think it's important that we hold both, but hold both, you know, don't just gaslight yourself and say, okay, I'm going to be fine. Like, what am I talking about? You're right. Like this is these teachings and it's true. And so many people have gone through this. So many hundreds of people have gone through this. Thousands of people have gone through this. Like, yes. And your feelings are still valid and it's still okay that you're scared. Mm-hmm. It's totally fine. In fact, you should be afraid, you know, cause it's scary. Right.
Yeah.
Like, and that's okay too. You know, let the process be what it's going to be, and know that you're supported. And I feel like going back to the question I asked, do you trust yourself enough to take care of yourself? Right. Like that is almost a different idea because we can go through all of this attachment, non-attachment, you know, do the sacred study, do the sacred book studies and practice and then surrender to the divine. We can do that, right? But can I then trust that I can care for myself? Can I get myself to that space? And can I continue to get myself to that space?
Hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Can I trust that when I am healing, I will allow myself to heal?
Yeah. I think that's a really good question to ask, you know, whatever it is that you're going through, me included, especially as I embark on this healing journey, it's just a nice touchstone to ask myself that every day. And it's not like you're going to, for me, especially, I can't answer that question or ask it of myself once and be done with it. It's a reminder. It's almost like a daily meditation. It's like, okay, today, okay, right now in this moment, do I trust myself? And that's just an invitation to pause and be like, well, where am I not trusting? And what is it that I'm clinging to? And what is it that's really wrong right now?
Yeah.
And how can I take care of myself right now?
Yeah.
So I love that as just a reminder to keep asking and to keep checking in and to realize that you might have to ask yourself that question multiple times.
And look, for a lot of us that have struggled with health things, like, you know, for me, I've talked about this openly. I struggled with infertility for many years, and then I went into premenopause, and then now I'm postmenopause. And, you know, there is this feeling of, well, I can't trust my body to do what it needs to do. Mm-hmm. So I need to control it, her, you know? And I think that that's also something that can exist for a lot of people, especially if you have gone through health challenges or if you're going through chronic illness. I'm really finding that I'm learning so much right now, because this is sort of the pathway that I'm called to go because of, again, my experiences. And I know that you and I can relate, and it's so interesting that we both kind of go through these same things at the same time. No. They sort of marry each other. Remember when your arm and I broke my hand? Yes. Like, it was
same day.
Kind of crazy. Yes. But I think it's really an important theme to examine for oneself. Is like, I remember when I came to that realization, I was sitting in the middle of acupuncture, and I had spent, I won't even share how much money I spent in my journey to find out what was going on. Cause at that point nobody knew what was wrong with me. I was having all these symptoms and nobody could figure out what it was. And once I finally came to the space of like, okay, I just need acupuncture to get myself back on track because my energy is all off. And I'm sitting on the table with all the needles and everything. And I like to do a little yoga nidra when I'm laying there, you know, and I'm just like kind of going through the thing. And I'm in this in between awake and asleep state. And I had this realization, like, oh my God, like I don't trust myself. I don't trust my body. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't trust my body to do what it needs to do to be healthy. Because your insides are broken. Like, that was the belief, you know, that was that core belief. Like, wow, that was deep, you know? Mm-hmm. And when I came out of that, I was like, wow, like, damn, like, that's heavy. How much of that is hindering me from getting to that place of optimal health, that belief? And so then I just started to change my mindset, because my body, in fact, was doing a lot of things that I trusted it to do. It was breathing, the heart was beating. The situation was working, my arms were moving, you know, like I was able to have that mind-body connection. And I realized it really is a belief that I need to challenge, right? So I bring it up because I think it's also important for us to be able to examine what those inner beliefs are. Because I know that there's statistics out there that prove how important the mind-body connection is and how important your mental state is to healing. I don't know if you've read The Mindful Body by Dr. Ellen Langer, who I'm so desperately trying to get on the show. If anybody out there knows her, please send us the connection. If you're out there and you're like, she's like the mother of mindfulness. And she talks about the importance of our mental well-being. Like, I'm not going to use any of the examples she uses in the book, but her sense is basically like, if you can think your way to health, mm-hmm. you can think yourself to healing. Like, there is a connection that we have that can allow us to be in a better state. And I'll just give you the example of my hand. When my hand was broken, right? I went into the ER when I was in Portland, after I tried to selfie myself on a bicycle. long, short story. Go back to 2017. I think there's an episode about my broken wing. So you can go ahead and listen to that, or we'll put it on the show notes. But I go in the doctor and we have it on film. The doctor's like, you're not going to be able to do yoga for 6 months. And I was on a yoga tour for Yoga Journal. Like, you're not going to be able to do yoga for 6 months. Like, stay off of it. They didn't give me a cast because I was leaving the next day. And she's like, well, as long as, and I'm like, no, it's fine. Like, I'll take care of it. And there's not really anything they can do, right? So they just wrapped it up. They made me a makeshift cast that I could put on all my fingers and I can put on and take off, put on and take off. And once you know, that was all done, I refused to believe that. I'm like, you know what? It's going to take a couple of weeks, but it's not going to take 6 months. And I just kept, you know, I was babying my hands, taking care of her, really being patient. And this is weird. I kept talking to her. I'm like, you're going to be fine. Like, we're getting through this. You're doing so good. Like, the swelling has gone down. You don't look like you have elephant fingers anymore. Like, we're getting better. And every day I would talk to my hand and say, you're getting better. Every day you're getting better. Look at you. Like, everything's, you know, getting better. And in 2 months, 8 weeks, I was totally back to normal. I mean, not fully back to normal. I mean, I still can't bend my fingers like I used to, but I was able to do yoga, no problem, no pain, totally fine. And when I went in for the 3 month checkup, the doctor was totally surprised. She's like, what did you do? And I'm like, I just took care of her, you know? I just took care of her. That's it. There's no real, I don't want to say this, and I don't want to speak out. Look, I'm not a doctor. Tessa's not a doctor. I'm just saying the mind component of healing is so powerful. We know our mind is a powerful place. And I'm not going to say, oh, I healed my hand. I'm just saying that my positive mind attitude, I believe, helped my little hand heal in half the time. That's all.
Well, and it certainly didn't inhibit it. So right. Like, why not? You know, why not?
Could you see a world where if you really bought into the story of the 6 months, how you could have easily made that true?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, the mind is a powerful place. So, you know, people say all the time, perception is reality. What you think becomes true for you. So mindfulness is something, absolutely. Check your thoughts. Where is that thought coming from? Whose voice is it? Is it yours? Is it true? Is it kind? Is it helpful? Like, those things matter. Thanks for that, Rosie, by the way. You taught me that one.
Oh, I'm like, did I? No, that's Byron Katie, but I learned it from Byron Katie. Okay. Yes.
Well, thank you, Byron Katie.
Yeah.
Passing it down. I radically love you. What do you radically love?
You. I radically love you too. I radically love this life and I radically love this community. And I'm so happy again to be here. And Tessa, like, we love you so much and we're thinking about you. And everybody listening to this podcast, please send Tessa some healing love. She's going to heal quickly, swiftly. And I'm not even going to say quickly because it's like that puts pressure on, right? She's going to heal in the right space, in the right time, in the best way, lovingly and kindly and compassionately. So make sure you send her some good juju.
I feel it. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you all so much for being here again. It really is so much fun. And Tessa, I love you. And I'm really looking forward to this journey. And I'm really looking forward to what this is going to look like in a couple of months. You know, like, we're growing. So those of you that are new here, thank you so much. We have had a surge of new listeners. So we are so grateful. I know it's so, it can be really overwhelming when you start listening to a podcast and there's like 500 episodes, like, it's a lot. So, you know, if you're just joining us now, like, the journey begins today. So take your time. If you want to go back and listen to some episodes, do it at your own pace, or you can just continue the journey with us from where you're at. So that works too. Please don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review. The reviews specifically on iTunes or like Apple Podcasts, they really help the podcast gain more traction. So if you haven't done so, please, please leave us a review. Let us know what you thought. And we'll be back here soon.
We love you. Take care of yourselves. Be kind.
Be kind. Bye.
Bye.
Hey, friends. Thank you so much for listening to the Radically Love podcast. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. It really helps. Also, don't forget to check out the Mindful Love Hub on Substack. This episode was produced by Tessa Tovar, music by DJ Taz Rashid.